Hello and welcome to episode 193 of WB40, the weekly podcast with me, Matt Valentine, Chris Weston and Tracy Keogh. A bit later in the week than usual, but a change is as good as a rest, and we are back. We are continuing to suffer what can only be described as the crappiest start of a summer ever, which is obviously penance for the fact that we've all been locked in our homes for the last 27 years or whatever it is. Chris, how has the week been treating you?
Well, that's a really good question, Matt, actually, because it has been, as you say, quite almost 2 weeks since we last did this, and I'm struggling to think of anything that's happened, really. I've been busy. Right, and I think I say that every week, but I've been busy. I've got different events coming up that I'm notionally speaking at, which means that I've got to record, in this case, presentations for them, which is always more work than you think it's going to be. Because first of all, you've got to do the whole presentation, then you've got to speak it. And when you turn up at an event and you speak at it, right, even if you've never done the presentation before, right, you keep an eye on the clock, you speed up a bit, you slow down a bit, you make a joke. You know, and you can hit the time pretty well and then you walk off and nobody has to worry about it again. But when you're doing it, when you're trying to record it to a video, gosh, that's hard work because it's never quite good enough and you have to start again and timing is difficult. So, I have to say it's not a thing I enjoy. I look forward to being able to turn up and just, you know, flounce about
Wing
and do
it.
My thing, yeah, in person. But it's just been one of those, as you say, the weather's been fairly grim, so no let up there. But I guess in brighter news, you know, we got the end of lockdown, and which meant I could go to the pub if I wanted to. Not that I did, but you know, it meant that I could.
Okay, so yeah, no, another 10 days of wandering. I think basically that like days, weeks, time has become this weird amorphous blob, and we need something to be able to start to break it up. So maybe it will be the ability to venture out of the house, or even venture out of the country. Tracy Keogh, it's over 2 years since you were last with us. How's your last week been?
It's been fine. So I moved to Brussels to be able to build out Grow Remote across Europe. I think there's a huge opportunity for us over here. So I find Brussels and the European and everything around that kind of very noisy. It's like reaching into a black hole. You don't know what's where. And so coming here kind of gives us the opportunity to maximise any opportunities that are here. So my week
and
has been fine.
Yeah, so literally first day in your new home in a new country.
First full day, yeah. So I did 30,000 steps today just to get used to the place, you know, the way you have to like walk around and then you get lost. And I think, as I was saying to you guys before we started, moving from a rural area to a city has been quite strange, particularly because it was a pandemic in a rural area, which is double isolation. It means you're very safe as well. And you come to a city and it's a bit different. I think that's why I was walking so much today, because I was trying to walk with purpose that nobody knew that I was new here. So I couldn't read my maps, so then I had to keep on going and then I was lost. So that's how today went.
There's something quite nice about being able to go and get lost in a place, though, to be able to find yourself in it. And these days with maps that are on your phone and GPS and all the rest of it, you can get properly lost and then know that you'll always be able to get home anyway. So.
For sure. Now, unless you get into a bad area, which I've done, but no, they are useful and maps are useful. And it is nice to be able to go and explore and stuff. In Ireland, there's a 5 kilometer limit on where you can travel to. So like going anywhere is nice.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. You must look out a friend of the show, Marcus Brown. He's got a walk that you can do anywhere. It's called the 90 Waypoint Walk. And it's a series of turn by turn instructions. That he originally recorded a walk he did in his hometown of Munich, and he just took turn left, right, right, left, right. And then he gives you this map, which is a thing that you can start from wherever. And if you're in a city, it's great because you can be able to use it to be able to take random turns essentially around a place.
And what if you end up where you don't need to be?
Well, you've got some wild cards. He gives you 9, I think, wild cards. So you can take an option to go, no, that doesn't look good.
Ah, okay. Okay, that's a brilliant idea, like treasure hunt. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So that might be a helpful way to not find your way around and go off the beaten track, as it were.
Yep.
So anyway, we'll talk more about Grow Remote a bit later in the show.
So, Matt, how's your week been?
Oh, thank you. I thought you'd never ask. Well, it's been interesting. I did my first talk at an event for a very long time. It was just an online thing, but something that was organised by Parago, which a friend of the show, lots of friends of the show, Dave Floyd, the company he works for with, is partly his company. And so we did a thing about using customer insight to be able to think about how you redesign your technology services, which is it was good fun. And I have made a big life decision, which is to stop writing my book, because I have got to a point where I realized I'm never going to finish it. So instead, as a result of that, I've had a creative burst and I've now created a new card game, which I'm now testing, which basically is far more playful than the book would ever be. And given that the book was about how to increase your ability to be playful, it feels much more congruent with what I'm trying to do. So I am testing that, and I'll be testing that for the next few months and iterating it and redesigning it. And then I will hopefully go and get that turned into some actual physical cards at some point in the next 4 or 5 months, hopefully. So that's good.
Good stuff.
Yeah, apart from that, just drawing up final contracts for the big project at work, which is very exciting, if a little dull, as you know, that kind of contracting stage of big projects is. More recruitment going on at work. Yeah, it's, you know, chugging away, still sitting at the same chair in my work, little office at home, enjoying every moment of it. Sounds good.
So 2 years ago, more or less, Tracy was on WB40 because I think you did an interview back then with Tracy about Grow Remote and about this idea that you could create remote communities, you know, communities where people could work remotely in a way that was a bit more structured and maybe supportive, and it was a way to, I guess, bring some kind of, you know, in rural locations like the one you were living in to build those communities. And really what we've seen in the last 12 months has got to have been an accelerant to some of that, and so maybe ask some questions. And maybe, I guess, Tracy, it's made you think a little bit about what you were doing and tested some of the validity of it and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it's done a lot. One of our learning and design experience, Lee, did a podcast recently, and the podcast was called Build Now, Cry Later. And I was like, that was her last year. Yeah. Just deal with the wave. So it was very intense from last April onwards, and there was a world of opportunity. And I suppose if we remember to the start of COVID, we didn't know how long it would last. Like in Ireland, they were like, 2 weeks, we're fine, don't worry about it. So we were like, oh, wow, 2 weeks for experiment around remote work. We need to go, go, go. And then it was longer and longer and longer. And then as that happened, opportunities changed, the market changed, and everything kind of shifted. But for us, the most exciting part was the systemic change that happened, because that's kind of where we sit. And a lot happened in that regard to enable our work to move forward.
Yeah, because one of the things that I got involved in last year was a thing called a Remote Work Survival Kit. It was something that came out of WB40, actually, where we just thought, well, what would happen if we just put a bunch of helpful information down on a Google document, and just to help people who did not know what to do.
Yep.
Companies that didn't know how to send people at home to work, people who didn't know what resources they might need or how they can set themselves up, and all this stuff that seemed, I guess, quite natural to those of us who had worked at home for a fair amount of time, wasn't natural and wasn't available. And there was certainly nothing from government. This was before lockdowns or anything like that. So it was a time when there was no real advice. So we did that. And actually, that it was amazing how quickly that snowballed and how many people got some use out of it. And that was that. And it was a thing that was useful at a point in time. But I guess from your point of view, because you'd been doing this for a while, and it was, as you say, it was your time, really. You'd managed to learn quite a lot beforehand. But did you then find that you'd been working with people with a certain mindset who had wanted that change, and then suddenly you were working with people who had it forced upon them? Was that different?
So the day that we were put into lockdown in Ireland, we were in an office of a large Irish organisation, like 8,000 plus employees. And we were in the meeting, we were talking about remote work. So we'd consider ourselves to be a community development organisation. We just use remote work to do community development. And in that meeting, we were talking about remote work and all its impacts. And they were like, yeah, and actually, it's great for a new yes and conversations. It's great for this, it's great for that, talent acquisition, like productivity. And then I was like, super, so why hasn't it happened? Because it gets frustrating after a while when, like, you hear surveys of like 77% of people want remote work. The company thinks it's a great idea. Employees think it's a great idea. Where is the blocker? And then it shifted quite quickly. There was a survey done in Ireland, though, just last week by the Western Development Commission, and it said that 2/3 of organisations don't know whether or not they're going to go back into the office or a hybrid or remote model. They don't know yet. And so I think that there's still a lot of movement where people are just trying to deal with being in a pandemic. And that's a very different thing to dealing with remote work. Like, they're not the same. So I think we're still in a very ambiguous phase where it could go either way. Everybody could go back in the office, and they have. We hear reports from New Zealand and China that they've gone back to the office. So there's definitely potential for that to happen.
It strikes me that there's, because the work you were doing, when we spoke last time, it was all about how do we use this rather than just for the interests of the organisation or just for the interests of the employee who wants more flexibility in their working. How can we use this for the interests of communities?
Yeah.
And communities that have in many different countries, not just Ireland, who have struggled to be able to sustain in the last 10, 20, whatever years. It seems interesting to me now that actually the community that there is the most fear coming from is the community of organisations that depend on cities, because we've now got this remarkable narrative, which is, oh, but what about the coffee shops? What about the sandwich sellers?
I love cities, right? And I love, there's an organisation in Canada called Sidewalk Labs that are kind of designing a city from the internet up. That's how they call it. And there's huge potential for urban areas. But sometimes I think of remote work the way sometimes city businesses look at pedestrianising streets. They think, don't pedestrianise them. People can park, then they'll come in for business. But like, parking is limited. If you pedestrianise the street, people are able to walk, they're able to enjoy it. And we know the business on the main street goes up. And it's the same with remote work. People are like, oh no, everybody's going to, if they're going to leave, it's because the city is not livable. So you've got more fundamental problems than remote work. So it's about time that you got to work on them. And actually having livable cities where people are able to integrate locally is amazing. And you're not forcing people into the city, and they're not stuck in traffic, and they're not all of those things. We did hear recently, though, how strong the lobbyist groups are for urban city centres. And even as the Irish government launched the most ambitious rural policy plan for rural Ireland, the Dublin business groups were out like, this is anti-Dublin. And we're like, phew. That's a stretch. Like, it's like, I won't even compare it to anything. It's a stretch. But it, not only is it not harmful, it is potentially hugely transformative for cities too. Like, this isn't us versus them. It's just equalising access to opportunity.
So should we just go back and just do a little recap about where Grow Remote has come from and what the kind of the original purpose, and actually to a great extent, yeah, the continuing purpose of it is. So why was it founded, and what are the organisation's aims?
Every time I tell the story, I change the story, so hopefully I get it right this time. Well, obviously, but we started in 2018 as a bunch of community developers. So the type of people that you'd know to like do tidy towns or clean up the street or run a sports club or whatever, you do anything that needs to be done. And we heard about remote work and we weren't sure what it was, and we got together around, should we spend time in it or not? And so it happened very naturally. And then in a week, we grew into 80 local communities, and we had no resource, no budget until October of last year. So we grew very organically into, in total, 144 local communities across 17 different countries. And the reason that we set up, some people ask about the motivation for Grow Remote because we're a nonprofit. It's not really a motivation, in my opinion. It's a frustration. So the problem with location agnostic employment, and we focus in on employment, not freelancing or entrepreneurship, but employment, is that when jobs are advertised in a location agnostic way, there is no business model to activate them locally. So if remote.com are advertising one of their 35 jobs available now in across the European time zone or the world, nobody's going to tell somebody in my community in the Burren on the west of Ireland about that job. And that's really frustrating, that the only reason that I don't know about that job is that nobody gets paid to tell me, because usually a recruiter will come in, or to be advertised in a jobs board or whatever. So we went in and kind of went in for a neutral place to put all the information around remote work. We educate one local leader, and they in turn educate their local communities. And that's fundamentally what we do. But then as that happened over the last few years, they started to give us new problems as they uncovered, kind of tried to build this out locally. And say one was, okay, you tell people that there's a job and now they know, but now they don't have the skills. So they're not able to access that job. So then we built a training course that's available free and nationwide across Ireland to all users. And that's the training skills in remote work. And then we have employer partners like Automatic, HubSpot, organizations like that who make sure that the training isn't just training. It's training that leads to good employment, and they can set the curriculum. They can do mock interviews and one-to-one CVs. And then people always speak about, you know, stopping the commute and things like that. And remote work is going to do all that. Unless we get into the root of the problem, which is in the policy, technology and culture within organizations, then just forget about it. So one of the pet peeves that I have is people speak about the people who are working remotely in our rural communities in Ireland, and they tell the stories about them. And I'm like, that is no use to me, because if that person quits their job, that job is going to be advertised in Dublin City Centre. I prefer if I didn't know about that, because now I know that there's an opportunity that was available to them and isn't available to me. And I think it could be just only child syndrome, but it really annoys me. Roles need to be remote, not people. And so unless we get into a point where Irish companies are advertising, irrespective of location, although preferably within Ireland for the Irish economy, then we're away with it, right? And one of the things that one of the guys who's on our board of directors, Tomás Síochán, he's CEO of the Western Development Commission. He was working on the policy for rural Ireland, and he got one line in there, which was, remote work can't affect your career progression opportunities, or location can't affect your career progression opportunities. And unless the organisation is remote first, it absolutely will affect their career progression opportunities. So getting that in there was really pivotal to the nuts and bolts, really, of how we transition the country to remote. I can't remember what the question was, but that's my answer. Yeah.
So you talked there about the policy needing to be in line. You talked about technology, and was it culture as well within all the... Yeah, so just dig down into those a bit in terms of what are the things that need to change in those three areas for remote working to become viable rather than just a thing that's added on to be able to meet, you know, the legislative needs of workforce legislation that says you have to have flexible working as an option?
Yeah, so I think technology within companies has pushed on a huge amount. So before I joined Grow Remote full time, I was in Ireland's largest bank, Bank of Ireland, looking at how they would do remote working. And we achieved things in our IT team that we thought absolutely impossible pre-COVID. So that has pushed on a huge amount. I think in the wider market, there's a huge scope for innovation around products and tools for remote teams, for sure. But there hasn't been a big enough market for it. If you look at the likes of Hopin, they're now Europe's largest, fastest growing startup. And they're fully remote, but they're also servicing the remote market. Now there's a market that companies will want to service. So we should see new innovation and tools and technologies. But in terms of like access tokens and basic things like that that weren't in large organizations, they are there now. And we have that kind of basic. Then you get into policies, like mostly they are there. It's the cultural shift that needs to happen. That is, I suppose, the next piece to go. And in Ireland, we're looking at like, what is the return to office strategy? So we know that most organizations don't let their office go completely. Like in some cases, they have very long leases. They can't let their office go completely. There isn't an option. But if all the management and leadership go into the office, then everybody else will go in there too. So unless there is a very deliberate and intentional way of saying we're going to come back fully distributed, then we're in for a pretty big... Co-founder of one of Ireland's largest remote companies said to us on a call last week, the whole thing would be a shit show. And we're like, can we quote that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to let me say that on the podcast, but he's right. And I think that they went from in-office to hybrid to remote. And he can see it a little bit down the line. I think you'll have like vaccine time when everybody's kind of like, oh, we'll see what happens. And then you'll have medium term and long term. And I think those three kind of area timeframes will be very different for lots of different companies. And it's up to organisations like Grow Remote to try and drive the shift towards remote-first cultures.
There's been some interesting stats in the UK in the last week or so, which were published by the Office of National Statistics. And I can't remember what the overall number was of people who have been working remote. It was in certainly less than 50%, because, of course, the one thing we need to keep in mind with all of this is that there are some jobs, and there are many jobs, that you can't do remotely. They're dependent on being in the place where the job needs to happen. So if I think of my own organisation, we have caretaking staff. They can't caretake from home. We've got care home workers who can't work doing care in their own home, you know, those kind of roles there. The bit of London that I live in has got the highest proportion of home working of anywhere in the country. It's about 72%. So it's very high, but it's affluent. It's a lot of people in knowledge-based work. It's people who go into the City of London and then just going, nah, I don't need to do that anymore. When we had Julia Hobsbawm on the show a few months ago, she talked about the difference between, she describes them as learners and leavers, and the different needs of people who were earlier in their career and later in their career. And not that necessarily that they need to be in the office or not, but there are different stages of where you are either in your life or in your life with a particular organisation where you have different needs as you're learning not only about what it is the organisation does and what the people do, but also what your role is and so on. Those are the kind of things where I think there will be a bias back to say, oh, you can only do this kind of thing if you're actually in the office.
Yeah. In Ireland, our Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, speaks about how remote work is bad for graduates. Now, for me, if you show graduates like PwC versus GitLab, they're like, let me go to GitLab because I get a retreat twice per year. I get a stipend to go and visit my colleagues in Greece and Malta and wherever they are. And I can choose where I live and be around my friends and not some people, as Chris Hurd says, that HR chose for me. And there's a huge opportunity there. But back to that piece around that thing around learning by osmosis, which is how it's phrased usually by companies. So the other program that we do through Grow Remote is a training program for people managers in large organizations. And out of that, we're seeing problem statements that exist in every organization. And usually there's the same 12 problem statements, but one of them is learning by osmosis. I don't think that we have a fix for that yet. So I think, you know, when I was a graduate, you know, you come in and say my manager would be at the photocopier and I'd be like, oh, I'll do that for you because I wanted to show initiative, because I wanted to, you know, and she's not at the photocopier when I'm working remotely. So I can't show initiative. So how do I do it? And it's much harder. But I don't think that there's a quick fix for that particular one. I think that the organization needs to be deliberate in building a remote first culture and processes and systems that are designed to solve for these challenges and surveying regularly. So we know we work with eBay, and Hazel Mitchell is the director for eBay in Ireland and UK. She's since on a promotion in some other country, but she built the first ever work from home team in eBay globally. And they're about 3 years in, and she says they're still learning. And the guys in remote say, you know, we've been hundreds of years understanding the office. We've had like a pandemic to understand remote work. There's a little bit to go, but I don't think that anybody thinks that it should be perfect. I think that concentrating on it, running surveys, iterating on solutions as you go is the best approach. And ultimately, I suppose, see, in Ireland, we have over 400 people employed for Shopify. So that's a huge density of remote workers in one area. And they would say that they've never felt more connected. They've never felt more productive. They've never felt all of these things. And it's like the founder of Automatics says around reaching remote work nirvana, it should be better than it ever was in the office. So learning by osmosis, yes, is a challenge, but there are definitely ways around it. And sometimes picking up the phone to somebody and going, how did you get on today? Is something that might have accidentally happened in the office, but because you're remote now happens intentionally, and that might be all the better for everybody.
That makes sense. I wonder what the especially rural communities though, what they have to do in order to make it more feasible for people to work remotely. I mean, and truly remotely, not as you say, like in a just living 10 miles away from your where you'd normally go to the office, but in a metropolitan kind of location, but in a rural community where maybe most of those people once upon a time in that community would have been the kind of people who had to go to do their job where they were, whether they worked in shops or farms or they worked in garages or whatever it might be, and now you're potentially pushing all of these awful knowledge workers with their, you know, very different lifestyles into these communities. Is it something that the communities have to kind of make a choice to do and provide those, because it's a different world, right?
What do you mean pushing people into the communities? Do you mean like attracting remote workers to an area?
Well, not pushing them, but what I mean is like giving the almost giving them the opportunity to not live in a shithole in a city, but live in a nice place, you know, with birds and trees and fresh air. And people will take that, right? They'll absolutely take that. They'll snap your hand off for it if they think, you know, if it works economically for them.
Yeah.
But it's different world, isn't it?
It's a different world. So there's one guy who told us he's very senior in an Irish bank, and he said that he saved up a deposit to buy a house in Dublin, and he used the deposit to buy a house outright in rural Ireland. He was like, I've no mortgage. This is amazing. You know, so it wasn't even a contest for him. There was a huge opportunity there. I think, though, if we look at the barriers for our rural communities, it's not necessarily that. It is that if you go to a rural community, you hear a very strong narrative that broadband and connection is the issue. And then you go into the community and say, do you know who GitLab are? Do you know who Automatic are? Do you know who Hopin are? Do you know who any of the companies to hire remotely are? And they're like, why are you talking about pyramid schemes to me? Like, they're not pyramid schemes. They're different things. These are real companies. They'll pay you, you know. So awareness of the jobs is still the biggest issue that we have in our local communities. It's not necessarily anything else. And then I think, yes, right. Then when you give people the option to live where they want, they'll choose the nicer communities. In which case, other communities need to step up their game. It's like a competitive market. Like if you're in a, if you're the only player in a market, you don't really have to fight as hard as you would if you had a competitor. If all of a sudden people can move and shift, then you need to build what we're calling remote ready communities. And when we asked people what remote ready communities were, they said a good pint of Guinness, a good coffee, a choir, kayaking club, all the stuff that matters when the location of your employer doesn't. And I don't think there's any harm in forcing councils and governments to step up and start building, because it's going to be really competitive. But like that's no harm. And sure, maybe then some communities, you know, might not be able to step up to the challenge, but we have to deal with them as they arise. Like, it is what it is. You know, you can't stop a wave from coming.
No, that's right. Absolutely. It's a economic force that's going to happen, and it's just a matter of how you react to it, isn't it? Whether you're an employer, or whether you're somebody who's a worker, or whether you're a council or a community, or whatever. And I was thinking to myself about this actually when Matt was talking about the data that was released, this kind of demographic data about how many people worked at home and how many people didn't. And actually, where I live was one of the lowest places for remote work. Most people hadn't worked at home. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's a place just maybe, it's 5 miles away, maybe 6 or 7 miles away, where it's one of the highest. And I'm thinking I should move, because that's where all my facilities are going to be if I'm going to be stuck at home now forever, rather than, you know, because they're not going to be here. And people are going to go to those, they're going to want those facilities and move to where those facilities are.
Yeah, and I think that, so a while ago, I think it might have been quite difficult to move, as in it was hard to see what was outside your area. You couldn't really tell. And I remember one particular story where a guy said to me, he was willing to move anywhere in the west of Ireland, but his daughter was really into tennis and he wanted to nurture that in her. So he was just looking for a town with a tennis club, but he didn't know how to begin to find that. And I think that you're seeing now tools develop around relocation. In Ireland, we've got a website called Gaffologist. And you can search any location in Ireland by the rent or the house price, but also do the schools have Catholic schools, multi-denominational schools, Muslim schools, whatever it is. Like, all of the things that matter when the location of your job doesn't. And when we see these tools come into use, then it starts to get very, like Nomad List obviously would be another one, but that's not necessarily for, you know, long-term relocation. But you see them come in and then you see, wow, people are really going to shift somewhere. And I think it was harder until now, and going forward it'll be a lot easier, and we'll see a lot more people being socially mobile.
Yeah, it's going to have knock-on effects into things, you know, as you're talking there, the way in which estate agents think about what's important. Great communication links, maybe not, you know, in the, you're on a motorway so you can get into a big city easy, maybe not quite the compelling thing it used to be. The way in which houses are provided and the sorts of ways in which developers build new houses, where working from home space, if you're going into an area that has lower property prices, is going to be much more important. You know, the knock-on effect of all of this is massive, but it's also going to take a long time, because there's a lot of infrastructure that's in play there that, you know, getting broadband out to places is one challenge, but rebuilding a housing stock so it enables people to go back to a world where they can work from home.
Yeah. And housing is a particular issue. So in Ireland, you know, back that piece around people being remote, not roles. So Kate Lister in Global Workplace Analytics was able to put a term on something that I've been trying to articulate for so long, which was the top 7%. So it was the people who could go to Dublin, pay their penance there, eventually after 15 years, become trusted by their employer. And then they say, hey, I want to move home. And then they get move home. But they come into our communities with a higher salary that we can't access. And they push up the price of houses. And maybe they're not there all year round either, which means our population dwindles during certain months, which means all of the cafes and hotels and pubs need less staff, which means less employment locally. And it just has numerous knock-on effects. So housing in particular has been an issue for our local communities in multiple different ways. Equally, there's an area in Ireland, Arramore Island, which is off the coast of Donegal, and it has a population of 400 people. And it ran a campaign around relocation, and it had 4,000 people looking to move to the island. And so that had a different problem altogether. But, you know, they just didn't have enough housing stock. But like that, they had to go to people who owned holiday homes in our communities and say, hey, please make them available all year round. But they did actually manage to do that.
From the work that you've been doing with helping organisations and people in organisations to do this, you talked a bit about the management side of this. From where you see things now, for organisations that are now confronted with this change that has been forced upon them, and it isn't going to go back to as it was. What do you think managers need to be doing differently to be able to do this? Especially those managers who, you know, I know them, that say, I can't trust them to be working at home.
Yeah. I remember actually one case, we brought in John Reardon. He's chairman of our board now, but he's also chairperson of Shopify International, and they're hiring 4,000 remote workers this year. But I brought him into one session in a large organization, and he was like, you know, vulnerability, openness, trust, guys. And Remote Howe said that last year trust was still the biggest issue in remote teams. And a manager in this organization said, but I can't trust Tom. Like, Tom went home during COVID and he did absolutely nothing. And John was like, is that a performance management? Is that a trust issue or a performance management issue? And then did that exist before COVID? Because he was like, oh, actually, maybe it did. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should talk. And then kind of he went through it. Right. So I think we do training, obviously, for people managers. And that goes across numerous different areas, from communication to performance management to whatever else. But what we found in organizations that work on a longer term basis is coaching and support for people managers as they try and deal with it. But more systemic to that is that if a people manager is in an organization where leadership are in the office, they don't really have much hope anyway. So we developed a maturity model with the HSE, which is the National Health Service here in Ireland. And it was like tracking from coping remotely to thriving remotely and the characteristics that would signify which stage you're at. But that was separated out between leadership, people managers and all colleagues. Because between people, there was one survey in an organization where like 90% of staff said they wanted to work remotely and 80% of managers said they wanted everybody in the office. You were like, okay, problem. And then the senior leadership were like, oh, you know, we're in the office. I don't know what they can do what they want. So from our perspective, if we look at kind of in Grow Remote, we did a thing called the theory of change, which is how you drive change in society. And if we want real proper systemic change, then we need, the next step is getting leadership there. So people managers are one cohort, but I think they're being looked after. I really do. I think that there's training in place there. Unless there is a cultural shift at a leadership level, then we're going to miss out. People managers have, you can get all the training you want, but actually if the underlying culture is you better be in the office if you want a promotion, you know, you can pretty much forget it. Even performance management systems had to be updated if organizations wanted to go remote because they were so focused on inputs, not outputs.
And for the kind of year or so ahead,
yeah,
with if we make the assumption that we're on the down tail now of the pandemic, and let's hope we are, but let's make that assumption, what do you think the things that organizations are going to need to build on are? What are the areas of focus? There's obviously that thing about leadership and being able to ensure that there's a kind of role modeling going on about what it is the organization wants. Are there other factors that you think are really particularly crucial at the moment?
A total shift to remote first culture. Like it's a big change transformation project within an organization. How do you handle your meetings? You can't have 8 people out of the office or in the office and 2 people dialed in. That is not equal access to information, people, context, and therefore opportunity. So you need to shift all that. Then you need to shift like where your primary workspace is from your main office to a digital workspace. Then you need to ensure that, you know, a great example is one company we work with used to have a chair in their meeting rooms, which would be quite common for the customer. And it's a different colour chair, and it's, well, what does the customer think? Imagine having the same chair but for a remote worker. Well, what does the remote worker think? Oh, nobody thought to ask him, actually. You know, something like that, where we need to be far more inclusive. And so as we move forward, it's that thing around moving remote work away from people and into roles and advertising jobs in a location agnostic way. And then companies are, to be honest, forced to fix any of the challenges around remote work. I think that from Grow Remote's perspective, because we're a nonprofit funded by mostly economic development agencies, we have a unique opportunity to share public information around case studies and what's happening. And I think we need to go out with, okay, one problem is learning by osmosis, another is social isolation, another is whatever. Here's how various different companies are solving for that and making that so easily available that any other company can use it. But we need to get companies in the position where they're already committed to remote, so they're committed to identifying the challenges in the first instances and then solving for that. So ideally in our world, you'll go on to the largest employers in Ireland at minimum onto their careers website, and at least a third of those roles will be advertised without any location. And that's what the future will look like when we're done.
Fabulous. An idea that time has come, I think. That's it for another week. Tracy, what are you going to be doing the week ahead?
I'm very bad for planning. I'm going to go and discover Brussels, meet some people. I put on LinkedIn and Twitter that I wanted some introductions to people. I got introduced to all sorts of everybody. So I'm going to go and leverage all of that. And the team in Grow Motor are doing some amazing things. We're announcing a new partnership, two new partnerships, actually, and just keeping going with what we're going with. I think that's my next week.
Brilliant. And we'll put a link to Grow Remote website on the WB40 podcast website show notes.
Amazing.
As well.
Thank
you. And Chris, can you remember what it is you've got in the week ahead, seeing as you did so wonderfully at remembering in the week past?
Well, I can't be expected to remember everything, Matt. You know, I'm a busy man. I've got, you know, we've got important things going on, very important. But actually, the week ahead, between now and when we next do this podcast, is only a few days, right? And all I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be recording these wretched presentations tomorrow. And I'm going to have my weekend. And I am going to do as little as possible this weekend because I've got a busy weekend next weekend. So I'm going to have a quiet one and just relax. What about you?
We've got friends coming over for a Sunday lunch, which is extremely exciting because it's been so long. And
very 2019.
I know. How retro, you know, we'll be eating like they did back in the late 20-teens. I will dress up like that and everything. It'll be amazing. And yeah, probably not going to. We bought a new car, so we've got to go and pick it up. But I think that's going to be after we record next week's show. So I'm slightly upset because I revealed that we've bought a Volvo at my management team meeting, to which somebody piped up with, only people in their 50s buy Volvos. And it was depressing how that was both true and also true. And yeah. There we go. But, you know, these things have eventually come to catch up with us. On the show next week, another change in direction. We're going to be talking with Nigel Walsh, who is an expert in technology in the world of insurance and recently joined Google to focus specifically on that sector. So I've got this potted theory that big data is going to kill insurance because it will know everything. Therefore, insurance will be something you can't afford if you need it. So we can explore that idea with Nigel next week. Until then, Tracy, thank you for joining us. Chris, as ever, a delight to be with you, and we will see you in a few days' time. Thank you for listening. You can find us on the internet at wb40podcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at wb40podcast. You can find us on Spotify, on Apple Podcast, and on all good other, not quite so popular, but you might use them, podcasting platforms. Subscribe!